broadcasting life and truth around the world. You're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. The mission of CRI and the Bible Answer Man broadcast is to teach discernment and to defend the essential doctrines of the historic Christian faith. Each day, Hank answers questions with a passion for apologetics, biblical literacy, and countering the cults. If you would like to ask Hank a question on air, call 888-ASK-HANK. That's 888-275-4265. For more information about CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at equip.org. To begin today's Bible Answer Man broadcast, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. You can also contact us via the mail at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. We'll go to your calls shortly. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. As mentioned, numerically 888-275-4265. I do want to once again promote the book God and the Transgender Debate by Andrew Walker, available to those who support the ministry of the Christian Research Institute. You can give in a safe, secure fashion and procure your copy, not only your copy, but copies for family members and friends at equip.org. I do want to mention that this book is very, very relevant to the culture in which you live, a culture in which nearly half of mainline Protestant pastors today now say that they support same-sex marriage. Just think about that for a minute. During the Clinton presidency, Bill Clinton fought to prevent gay marriage from becoming a reality in the United States through his Defense of Marriage Act. But if you fast forward a few years, you have precisely the opposite reality. You have his wife, Hillary, once a supporter of her husband's defense of marriage as a union of a man and a woman, campaigning vigorously for the legality of gay marriage. And a few years ago, there was one dogma regarding gender. Today, there is quite another. Yesterday, gender and sex were coupled together. Today, well, gender is broadly conceived of as little more than a social construct. There's an article in the National Review I read this morning. It was actually published on the date of my wife's birth, or at least the celebration of her birth, her birthday, 2020, so just a few days ago. The article was titled, Notre Dame Plays Host to Transgender Ideology. This is by a lady named Alexandra De Sanctis, who is a graduate of the University of Notre Dame. And she says that the university featured recently a gender studies program in which every speaker, without fail, affirmed that boys can be girls, that girls can be boys, and that boys and girls can be something other than a boy or a girl. That gender is, well, multidimensional and non-binary. That children must be allowed to assign their own gender and then be reinforced by medical professionals through counseling, puberty blocking, drugs, cosmetic surgeries, and the like. That three-year-olds know exactly who they are, and that surgically altering healthy body parts to accord with their self-conception is necessary in order, well, to save their lives. In short, says De Sanctis, the University of Notre Dame would rather risk the wrath of faithful Catholics than condemn the prevailing dogma of modern society, dogma that clearly flies in the face of history and evidence. And if you want to know precisely how it does that, again, get Andrew Walker's book, God and the Transgender Debate. It is available for those who support the ministry. Let's go to the phone lines. A lot of you hanging on. We'll talk first to Kane, listening in Keller, Texas, on the web. Hi, Kane.
Hi, Hank. The question that I wanted to ask was about 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how Christ, after he was put in death but made alive in spirit, he went and made a proclamation to the imprisoned spirits who were disobedient long ago in the days of Noah while the ark was being built. And I was wondering who or what spirits was he referring to exactly?
Well, I think in the context, the reference is to those who were disobedient, those that did not heed the command of God through Noah's preaching. But I think in a broader context, you have Christ through the Spirit doing precisely what he did when he was on this earth. So Christ, during his earthly sojourn, as we read in the Gospels and as is elucidated in the didactic epistles of the New Testament, was preaching redemption to those who were held captive to sin. And you have the thief on the cross who received the message in the end with gladness, and the thief who rejected that message. And so the same thing happens with what is commonly depicted as the harrowing of hell, where Christ goes in the Spirit and preaches to those who are held captive in Hades. And that includes all of those. To some, it is a proclamation of victory. It is the antitype that fulfills all the types and shadows. And for some, it is the message of good news that they weren't privileged to hear while in the flesh. And if you look at the teaching of almost all the church fathers, you have a conclusive indication that the preaching of Christ was extended to all without exception, and salvation, therefore, was offered to all the souls who had passed away from the beginning of time. And that is, whether it's Jews or Greeks, whether it's righteous or unrighteous, from Adam to the time that Christ died, or the time between his death on the cross and his resurrection and victory 3 days later.
Okay, so this was not referring to angels or demons or any of that sort. It was those imprisoned in Hades, human spirits imprisoned in Hades?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no indication based on either specific biblical stories or theological implications that can be drawn from the biblical text that would indicate that this is angels. The angels had already fallen corporately with Satan. They rebelled and they fell, and therefore the judgment and the proclamation of victory does not take place at this time, but rather was something that they had requisite knowledge of at the time that they were created and subsequently fell into disobedience.
Okay, thank you.
You got it. Thank you. There's a lot of great stuff that I have been reading on this by the early church fathers, trying to wrap my mind around it, because this is one of the areas that I had a particular view on that I have taught over the years, that now comparing my views, views that I came up with in the 21st century, to the views of the ancient church, I've had to moderate my own views in this regard. Again, because I think it's common sense to believe that not only did the early church give us the Bible, but it gave us a right interpretation of the biblical text as well. And so I have been studying the Eastern Fathers in particular, but not just the Eastern Fathers, and it has been extraordinarily helpful to me in doing the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Again, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. We'll be back in just a few moments with more answers to your questions. In the meantime, I do want to thank all of you who stand shoulder to shoulder with me in the battle for life and truth. You're touching the lives of people, not only for time, but also for eternity. And in the process, you're making an eternal difference. We'll be right back with more answers to your questions. So again, please don't touch that dial.
Former Vice President Joe Biden recently said that transgender equality is the civil rights issue of our time. When leaders of our country are framing gender identity issues as such, how does a Christian defend a biblical worldview of gender without being labeled a hateful bigot? The book God and the Transgender Debate by Andrew T. Walker is a must-read for every Christian seeking to understand what the Bible really says about gender identity. To receive a copy of God and the Transgender Debate, What Does the Bible Actually Say About Gender Identity?, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, 888-7000-CRI, or go to equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition Revised and Updated is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition Revised and Updated is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the revised and updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.
Throughout history, gender was understood as binary, male or female. Today, Facebook offers over 50 gender options for its members. If you're feeling confused, you're not alone. What is transgenderism and gender fluidity? In a culture ready to label anyone who questions the transgender agenda as hateful and bigoted, how should Christians respond? Christians need to understand and provide a biblical response to the transgender agenda, which is why the book God and the Transgender Debate by Andrew T. Walker is a resource every Christian must read to understand the issue of transgenderism and what the Bible actually says about gender identity. To receive your copy of God and the Transgender Debate, What Does the Bible Actually Say About Gender Identity?, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Now back to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you so much, Randy. And back to our phone callers. Charlie next in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Hank, how are you?
I'm good.
Hank, I got a question for you. I wanted to know what you thought about the chronological order of when Satan and his third of the angels fell. Was that before or after Adam and Eve in the garden? Because I've heard different things when he was cast down. And I know in one part of Job, he says, you know, when the sons of God, you know, came, I guess, to a council meeting or something, Satan said that he was walking above and through the earth. So I just wanted to know what the chronological order was with the fall of Satan compared to Adam and Eve when they were tempted. Were they already created or?
Yeah. So first of all, I wouldn't read the Bible in a wooden literal sense, in the sense that a fall means that Satan cannot appear in the presence of God. The fall is a way of demonstrating that Satan fell from God's goodness and grace by resisting his goodness and grace. So it's talking about his rebellion, not a physical fall. Secondly, the chronological order is that Satan and a third of the angels fell prior to the time of Adam and Eve's disobedience. Satan was the source of the temptation. So Satan appears in the liminal space, as it were, a place for the interaction of God and man, and Satan now tempts Adam and Eve to become gods by their own design, as opposed to the design that God had given them, the design by which they could eat from the tree of life. And if they had done that, they could have eaten from the tree of knowledge as well. In other words, if they had progressed up the mountains of Eden to the Shekinah glory of God, they would have had eternal life. They would have become more and more godlike, and infallible knowledge would not have been withheld from them. They would have been able to gain that, but they disobeyed God. And that at the temptation of Satan, who feigned to give them something that was not in his power to give. So again, the deduction from the theological text is that all of this happened prior to the fall of Adam and Eve.
Okay, so then I understand what you're saying. So even then, in the context where we get, you know, it's not a physical fall, like you said, but then the verse that comes to my line is Satan fell like lightning. And, you know, I want you to answer that. But then also in the same context, why would, so I guess what I'm trying to ask besides the lightning part is, why would God even initially let him come and tempt and have that? I understand that's because of freedom, but if he was cast down like lightning, is that still a metaphor or?
Yeah, and there are a lot of metaphors like that in the scripture. For example, if you go to Isaiah chapter 14, you hear the words of Isaiah, inspired by God, "How have you fallen from heaven, O morning star, son of the dawn? You have been cast down to the earth. You who once laid low the nations, you said in your heart, 'I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit enthroned on the mountain of assembly, on the utmost height of the sacred mountain. I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High.'" So you hear or see language that is meant to connote rebellion on the part of Satan. And yes, Satan and the angels were created with volition, just like Adam and Eve were created with volition. So in either case, they had the opportunity to act or to act otherwise. So they are completely culpable for their sin.
Okay, yeah, because I've heard pastors say that, you know, one of the reasons why God let that happen, and some did even, you know, acknowledge what you said. They said that that was so that, you know, if Satan was sitting there, basically, and I'm using context, was saying, give me a chance and they will worship me, that God put them down to give man free will, and that he knew that Satan was going to tempt them, and then that's the free will, and we all have to have that free will, and we all have to choose, and you know, and then God going on the cross and all that.
Certainly God could have done it otherwise, but again, had he done it otherwise, we would have people who are not exercising free will, and without free will, love is rendered meaningless. Same thing is true with the angelic beings as well.
Hank, real quick, because you're hard to get a hold of, and I know you have other callers. Can angels procreate? Because we talk about Genesis when it says the angels, when they fell, they came down, made a pack, and took all the women and had children.
Yeah, they cannot. Cannot procreate. So that whole Genesis 6 mythology, that, or at least the mythology that's sort of forced onto the passage, doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Satan can't procreate, devils can't procreate, angels can't procreate. God created a set number of them, and we see Jesus himself saying as much, that in heaven we're not going to be procreating, rather in heaven we are going to be like the angels.
So then how did the giants come, Hank? And then is that when they
Well,
say
the text actually tells us that.
God.
They were on the earth at that time and also afterwards. So these were men of renown, men of old. And so they were already on the earth, and this was never a function of angels having sex with women. First of all, angels are non-corporeal, and therefore they can't have sex with women. Certainly, God can have an angel take on physical form, but there's no warrant whatsoever for suggesting that Satan or his minions can take on physicality. I got to go back to the phone lines. A lot of people hanging on, as you just mentioned. Dennis in Springfield, Illinois, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Dennis.
Well, hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question. A friend of mine is reading through the Bible for the first time, and in the Old Testament, they had multiple wives. In fact, the 12 sons from Jacob came from, of Israel. They came from multiple wives. And I was asking why that was allowed then, and God blessed the codes back then. And yet today, we say that God says one wife.
Yes.
And so does God change over time?
No, not at all. Not at all. And let me answer that question quickly, because I don't want to run out of time, and perhaps there'll be a little time for a follow-up. But polygamy, or the practice of one man having multiple wives, was common in antiquity, but it was never God's plan. The ideal pattern for monogamous marriage, the marriage of one woman and one man, was established early on in Genesis, where the text tells us that a man will leave his father and his mother and be united to his wife, and they'll have one flesh. And this very passage was quoted by both Jesus and Paul in defense of the sacredness and, I would add, exclusivity of monogamous marriage. And I would add to this point the reality that the Bible explicitly condemns the polygamy of the Old Testament kings. There's a memorable passage. I always remember it because it's 17:17. It's Deuteronomy 17, verse 17. This is where you have a strict condemnation of polygamy. And then in the New Testament, you have the elders and the deacons who are called to be husband of but one wife. So the requirement for church leaders set the standards for morality and spiritual maturity for all believers, and the admonition against polygamy for the kings of Israel demonstrated the danger of this practice for everyone. And one other point that I'll add to this, because you're asking a very significant question, and that is that God's disdain for polygamy is seen in the consequences of polygamy. The Old Testament clearly reveals the strife, the temptation that accompany the practice of polygamy. And of course, Solomon is the quintessential example. His legacy of faithfulness was compromised because of his polygamous behavior. And despite his well-renowned wisdom, his peaceful, his prosperous rule ended in scandal and civil strife. For many wives, polygamy turned his heart after other gods. We have to leave it at that because I am out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Do you remember Monday through Friday at this time? You can call 888-ASK-HANK to ask your question live on air, 888-ASK-HANK. And again, thanks for standing shoulder to shoulder with me in the battle for life and truth.
You've been listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To learn more about Hank or the Christian Research Institute, just go to equip.org. Equip.org is a fountain of information and resources designed to help you defend the faith and grow in your knowledge of the truth. You can also stream the broadcast live or download archived broadcast. To talk with a resource consultant by phone, call 888-7000-CRI. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.